Welcome to the weekly wind down. We are very excited tonight to be joined by two other authors from Bold Strokes Books. We have Chaz Lamar with us and Frederick Smith. We're going to get to that in a minute, though. So before we get started, I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
And I'm Jean, the feisty feminist.
I'm Chaz Lamar, the turn up responsible king.
And I am Frederick Smith, also known as Scholar Baywatch.
Oh, wow. Okay, you guys just crushed it. That's the best intro of guests we've ever had.
Win.
Yeah, hands down. Okay, so tonight I am drinking, it's called Wonderful. It's not. I belong to this wine like club called Wink, and it's not good. It's not good at all. Sometimes it's good. This time it's not. It says life gets a little bit sweeter with a glass of great wine. This full-bodied, wonderful red blend melds aromas of blueberry and chocolate covered with cherries with baking spice and a little smokiness. None of that is true. It tastes like cough syrup. But I'm a team player, so I'm going to drink the whole thing like I always do.
Yeah. It sounds like a wine that, like, 21-year-old me would have really enjoyed. Yeah.
Yes, it does. Yeah, or, like, it needs Sprite.
Oh, that's a good sign.
But I'm going to suck it up and get through it.
We always do.
Mm-hmm. Atta girl.
I am drinking Girl and Dragon Pinot Grigio, and I bought it just for the label. It's pretty good. I don't normally drink white wine, but I wanted something just because it's been really hot the last couple of days. And I'm like, I don't feel like drinking a red. I would swear if I didn't see it before Game of Thrones became like such a big thing that it was modeled after Game of Thrones, because it's got like a blonde girl on the front and a big black dragon. And it's real fancy.
Are you sure it's not modeled after Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, you can tell. No, God. Well, not now that you're, like, really asking.
What are you willing to wager?
No, I'm not going there. It's
God, you're
good.
Easy to talk down.
All right. I did not go to the store with the intention of getting more canned wine, but I keep seeing these cute cans. No.
Everybody likes a cute can, Stacey.
See?
True.
So I got this Fresh and Bright Crafters Union Pinot Grigio. And same thing, I don't love Pinot Grigios, but I felt like white wine tonight. But you have to see the can. It's so cute.
Yeah. That is cute. Very colorful.
You'll be proud because I got a rosé too. And I was like, no, I'm going to drink the Pinot Grigio tonight, not the rosé. Because
why would we be? Oh, because you're not drinking rosé.
Because I drink rosé like every single week.
I was going to say, what would be proud of you? Is it a stretch for you to bring rosé on the show?
Yeah, one of the things.
Erin's going to lose her shit, you know, when she finds out that you're not drinking rosé tonight.
It's good, though. It says it's a premium wine.
In aluminum.
In a can. It's good, though.
Jean, what are you drinking?
All right, well, I have, when you said we were going to be discussing Mitch McConnell tonight, I picked out a Zinfandel called Zinsanity. So I think that pairs well with the Mitch McConnell.
I was waiting for like a topic. Turtle reference or. Yeah.
No, if there was no turtles in on any of the labels, so I had to go with Zinsanity. I figured that's the second best. It's a 2015 Lodi Zinfandel, and it says that it is trained, cultured, and crafted from scratch, a wine worth going to extremes for.
As opposed to what? What else would wine be created from?
I don't know. I don't know. And you know what? I'm working on my second buzz of the day. So
atta girl.
I don't know if I could really give a true interpretation of what this is supposed to mean. It's kind of good. It's a nice red. It's light sipping wine. A little bit of sweetness. And, after an afternoon beer buzz, I guess you really can't go wrong.
I love jeans.
Hashtag jeans summer vacation. Yes.
I'm Teachers still retoxing, take over. Baby.
Jazz, what are you drinking?
I'm not drinking wine, but my drink is in a wine glass. It is vodka, Kirkland vodka with Rite Aid Pedialyte.
I love it.
The greatest thing I've ever heard. And because it's orange, it almost a little looks like it could be wine.
Yeah.
So is this something that like you've tried and like it's good for a hangover? It really...
When I plan on turning up hardcore, which I am this weekend because it's Pride, I try to stay hydrated. So electrolytes, it's what's needed. And it also tastes like medicine, but hey, it'll take care of me in the morning.
It's very efficient.
And I keep hearing that Pride is a marathon, not a sprint. You have to make it through all the way.
Right,
that's
girl.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
12-hour shift, Pride.
Frederick, what are you drinking?
So today I am drinking a Maddalena Riesling. I purchased it at this winery that's right up the street from my house called the San Antonio Winery. But this wine is a 2011 made in Monterey, California. I love sweet wines. I'm not really into reds. And so this is serving me perfectly on this hot day in LA.
Does it have Pedialyte in it?
Just like a Pedialyte floater.
I don't know if that's like a new LA trend that we all need to catch up with or...
Pedialyte ice cubes.
You do. Get into it.
Hey, I am not... That's going on my list for next time I'm back in California with them. Yeah, for sure. Because I'm like, why are we wasting time with water?
Exactly.
And it's good to have on hand for Lincoln too, in case he gets diarrhea. I mean,
of course, it's for Lincoln. Yeah, that's what, I got a pack
totally,
of Pedialyte
totally
for Lincoln. Yeah.
But you all never party with Pedialyte? My goodness, it saves you.
I only do it the next day.
Yeah, same.
Oh no, you have to do it the same day.
I needed you these 10 years tips. Ago.
Right? Yeah. These pro tips. This is amazing.
I am learning a lot.
So, why don't you guys tell us about your the book you two wrote together?
As you go.
Okay, well, just talk generally about it. Okay,
please,
well,
yeah.
The book follows two characters, Zaire James and Kenny Kane, which is set in West Hollywood, which is located in Los Angeles County, and it takes it looks at their lives in a year span as they navigate drastic relationship shifts in that year. And they're both entering a different age bracket. So Zaire James is turning 30 and Kenny Kane is turning 40. And it's all about their life, navigating relationships, drama, work life, and being great and young and Black in West Hollywood.
Yes.
That's all good stuff. And we had a lot of fun writing, in case you forgot, together. It was the first time for both of us writing a project with someone else. Usually I've written solo and Chaz has done, you know, his own poetry and spoken word solo. But we decided, why not work together on a book? And the time just felt right when Bold Strokes Book sent out a call for, you know, new manuscripts and things like that. I said, Chaz, let's write a book. And Chaz was like, okay. Let's write a book. And that's how In Case You Forgot came about and everything.
Yeah.
But really, yeah, it's just about, it navigates like from one Pride season to the next Pride season in West Hollywood. And West Hollywood, for those who might not be familiar, is kind of like the gayborhood of Los Angeles. It's where there's a huge concentration of gay bars, lesbian bars, everything that's queer comes together in like that 2-mile radius. And it just follows their lives together, romantically, career-wise, family, all that kind of fun stuff.
So how did you guys approach writing the book? Did you, since you're in the same area, did you sit down and write together? Or Gene and I wrote a book together and we sent the manuscript back and forth. So I was wondering if you guys did that or if you actually sat down and wrote it together.
Well, the fun part with technology is that Google Docs was our best friend.
It was. So,
it was our best friend, but we did start out initially, we would meet at the West Hollywood Library just to get us placed in the right setting, looking at the different locations and everything. But we would meet at the West Hollywood Library every weekend in the mornings, and we would just sit and talk ideas. Where was the direction of the story going? What was coming next? What would Kenny do? What would Zaire do? And we would sit and just kind of free write together, both our respective chapters. And then we would leave, and during the week, we just kind of look on the peek at the Google Doc and see, oh, Chaz wrote this about Zaire, or wrote this about Kenny. Oh, you wrote me into a corner. I need to get out of this corner, and things like that. It was a really fun challenge and something that was new for me.
So, who are the characters based on?
They are based on all of the people that I've met and all the people that I have not met. Yes.
It's all the men we've loved before. Wanted to love before.
What was your favorite part about writing it?
Ooh, my favorite part about writing it was, okay, the Google Doc, being able to see if Fred added more, or listening or experiencing Fred's reaction to something that I added without him knowing, and then finding it. That was my favorite part. It was really cool because I don't write with other people, especially like poetry, intimate and personal. But this piece was fun to write with someone else to see how they would respond. And it also gave me an insight to see how someone like would just read the book early on. Because we didn't tell each other. Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, it seems almost like improv writing.
Yeah.
Like where the scene partner has like the control, like when they're handing things out, and you just have to go, like, it's like the yes and principles, like, all totally work with this kind of, like, that's where you are, and you have to go with it. Like, now you take it and do something with it. Like, that's so cool.
Exactly. That was fun for me.
Yeah, that was fun for me,
too. So were you friends before starting to write together?
Yeah, so we have known each other personally and professionally for
intimately
a few years. Oh, never intimately. No friends with benefits right here. We are strictly platonic. But my day job is at a university, and Chaz was once one of my students many, many years ago. And so I've seen Chaz, you know, grow and develop personally, professionally, and now we're in the same profession working in universities, but we've always had an interest in creative writing and in the artistic scene here in Los Angeles, and things like that. And so it just seemed like a natural extension because we're both passionate about social justice, about politics, about issues and everything. And knowing where we both were last year in terms of different stages of our life, it just felt natural for us to work together. And Chaz has always said, Fred, you're some of the best books I've ever read before. And I'm like, oh no, not really. But it was just really quite an honor to write and work together.
Yes.
That's awesome. It's almost like its own story in itself. I would read that.
Yeah.
Sounds so cool.
It'd be a great idea for us to pitch.
It made the process easier for me to know Fred, because we know each other so well. And so it made the process of writing with each other easier. Yeah.
Is that Louisiana accent?
Oh my goodness, who's from Louisiana?
No, I said your accent.
Oh, my family's from Louisiana.
You got a little Southern draw there.
Oh my God.
So how did you guys both find writing? Just for a hobby, but for something that you do, you know, for Bold Strokes.
Oh yeah, so for me, the journey started, so, you know, there was all the elementary school writing and high school newspaper and things like that, but a few years ago when I moved to Los Angeles, originally I came here knowing I was working at a university, but I wanted to write for television. That didn't work out, so I said, I want to write novels, and so I took an extension class in creative writing at a university across town, and there I met some really great mentors and teachers who took me under their wing, who got me connected to their writers groups, and then voila, connected to an agent, and then to my first books, which were not on Bold Strokes Books. After that contract ended, I started seeing the call for manuscripts of Bold Stroke, and so I pitched my third novel to them, which is called Play It Forward, and that's kind of how it all began. I know many writers struggle with the whole finding an agent, getting published, and, you know, I really feel for you know, that struggle that we have as writers and artists and everything. But for me, it kind of, I don't want to say it was easy because there was a lot of rejection, but it just seemed to like come naturally, both the writing process and finding my way to agents and the publishers and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me writing, my mother gave me a journal her second time in rehab, and I think I was a teenager. And I started writing all my thoughts and feelings in that journal, and that journal became my poetry experience. So in undergrad, I started to perform poetry, and some folks liked it, and I liked that people liked it. I liked that people resonated with the things that I started to share, and I started to perform more. And then the day that Fred said, "You want to write this book with me?" I was prepared. I said, "Absolutely." And I read all of Fred's books and some of my favorite authors. I met one of my favorite authors, Pearl Clegg, and she always said that you must write as many stories as possible. And so when Fred really presented himself, I didn't hesitate. I said, "Absolutely, let's write together."
So yeah. What's your favorite books outside of your own? What's your favorite books to read?
Oh, wow. So I can tell you authors. I really love this one author, Terry McMillan, mm-hmm. Waiting to Exhale, Stella Got Her Groove Back, Who Asked You. I love Pearl Clegg, Tayari Jones, who just wrote this book that's been winning all the awards this season, An American Marriage. Eric Jerome Dickey, Elan Harris. I used to sneak and read Elan Harris, the Black queer author. He was big like in the 90s and 2000s. I used to sneak and read his books in high school and in college and everything. Those are some of my favorites. And Chaz, what about for you?
Well, you named some of the folks that I that I enjoy, like Elan Harris. But my favorite book of all time, and I was like, gosh, am I really going to say this? But I am. It's Perks of Being a Wallflower. Something about that book. It's so simple, and I like how it talks about a lot of things just in a subtle way. It's so poetic to me, but I really enjoy Perks of Being a Wallflower.
That's a great story. I'm a big fan of that one.
The movie was good, too.
I think the movie didn't do the book justice.
The movie was really
good.
Yeah. Well, they never do, but...
They never.
Yeah. So moving away from writing a little bit... What do you two feel is kind of the most existential threat to the queer community as it stands right now, with the exception of Donald Trump, because we all know that's he's
a threat to everyone.
To everyone.
Yeah. Huh. Well, you know what? One of the things I think a lot about is how disconnected our community sometimes can be from the roots of Stonewall, from the roots of the Pride movement, and the fact that it was trans women of color who were fighting the police at the very beginning, and that this really was a riot or a civil disobedience that was really centered in struggle, and that was centered in hey, we're not going to take abuse from the police, from, you know, our city leaders and things like that. And I think that Pride in itself has sometimes been co-opted by corporations and by business interests, and you know that it turns into like, you know, who can look the best on top of a float with me. A bottle. Well, me too. but you know the struggle, you know, started, or the movement started in struggle, and I think that remembering that as well as the fun part is something that I think our community really should be thinking about at all times. Just my opinion.
That
have you ever thought said, of, sorry go ahead Jess.
Yeah, I was about to say, Fred said so much of things that I was going to say, but I'll just say it shorter. I guess capitalism gets in the way of us uniting queer folk, queer and trans people, and you talked about something about that corporations, but I think that's harmful for us.
Have you ever considered writing a book that takes place around, because yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, and this generation, I mean, there's a lot of, it's funny that they can't necessarily line all their stories up straight, even though there's still people alive who were actually there. You know, they can't decide if bricks were thrown. They can't decide, you know, who threw the first punch. They can't decide any of that. So have you ever considered writing a story to kind of bring it back to this generation, to kind of give them a first person view of what happened? Actually, I just thought of that. You can't take it. It's mine. No, I'm just kidding.
I decided, that would be interesting. But I do think I think it's so important for, you know, today's generation to understand the struggles of, you know, their foreparents in terms of making today easier for many of us within the queer community, even though we still have struggles, but it's much easier than it was, you know, 50 plus years ago.
Yeah, I think
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was saying, Fred, you did talk to me once about your ideas of looking at queer folks of color experiences in LA and the history there. And because we are losing spaces in specifically LA that has rich history that goes back like 4 decades and that are just being wiped out. So you have had some.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let me show this really quick. So I have had this idea. So there were two legendary clubs here in Los Angeles that started because West Hollywood traditionally back in the 60s, 70s, didn't let Black people in or Latinx people into the clubs. And so this woman named Jewel Tyus Williams opened up this really big club called The Catch, which is in South Central Los Angeles. And it was big with the Black gay community. And then this other couple, and I'm blanking on their names right now, Jean and someone else, they opened up a club called Arena and Circus where Latinx Chicanx identified gay people went to, and those were huge nightclubs for during the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And then just within the past like 2-3 years, both closed. But so many personal stories, even for both of us, came out of both of those clubs. And I've always thought about what it would be like to document those spaces that kind of came out of resistance or came out of struggle because they weren't allowed in the other clubs, even in a liberal place like, or seemingly liberal place like Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Their own clubs. And so I've often thought about the story of Circus Arena and The Catch in Los Angeles as some history that we need to document and capture before, you know, people pass on and those stories get forgotten.
Well, get on it, Fred. That sounds like an awesome idea. Come on.
So I'll do it together.
Yeah.
That's kind of an issue going on in a lot of big cities right now. I know like the last lesbian club in San Francisco closed within the last 10 years. And as, you know, gay people start to become a larger part of mainstream society, they start moving to the suburbs and raising families and stuff. The gayborhoods are kind of going away. I wish you guys could have seen his face. But it is kind of reducing the size of the gayborhoods in some of the most historical areas of the country and where kind of the entire movement started. I understand the concept of losing the roots of pride and kind of the real meaning behind it. I think it's kind of twofold. I think I'd rather have corporations kind of be, you know, you can walk in and see rainbow flags as opposed to them saying, we're not going to serve you kind of thing. So I don't think people who are coming out today, you know, there's kids in high school who are coming out now that don't fear what their parents are going to say. And that, of course, that doesn't go for all of them. There is a huge swath there's more LGBT homeless kids than any other population of homeless youth, but they'll never experience what it's like to truly be terrified in public spaces anymore. With the exception of some locations, obviously, and those are sweeping generalizations, but I don't know. I think it's kind of twofold. I think any time that cultures and demographics kind of go mainstream and kind of start pushing out, and the more people that come out and the more people that know that we exist and trans people exist, and the acceptance for the LGBTQ community has kind of, it went faster than the acceptance of any other civil rights community in the history of our country, right? Mm-hmm. Like we got rights way faster than people of color have, than women have. It took us it's only been 100 years since women got the right to vote. Like, I don't know. So I think it's kind of twofold. It's nice that places are accepting. It's frustrating that they capitalize on it. Like, I wish there was a good balance between the two. And I think what you were saying was it's kind of introducing this new generation to where it all came from. Because it's one thing to see a 45-minute documentary in June on HBO that covers the overview of the Stonewall riots. It's quite another thing to hear first-person accounts and to really be in the shoes and listen to the stories of people that not just came from Stonewall, but came from the clubs that you were discussing as well. I think Jean's right. You need to get on it. Those stories have to be told.
Yeah.
We're counting on you guys to save it. So, I mean...
Yeah. No pressure.
No pressure. But it's an easy balance for me. Like, for the corporation, they want to be part of, like, Pride. Like, let's say a Coca-Cola. Be part of Pride. The balance for me, they fund all the shelters, the queer shelters. There shouldn't be a reason why these major corporations can't fund LGBT organizations.
Yeah.
Things like that.
Right.
That
right.
Yeah, they should be supportive, not just in June, but year round. Yes. And you look at where they're putting their money the rest of the year, and it is questionable. Like you mentioned, Coca-Cola, how much money did they funnel to the Republicans this last election cycle?
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think calling them out on that kind of stuff is important. And I mean, they're a corporation, so it's easy to say they're going to play both sides. But when you have an administration that's actively working against the rights of people, not cool. Not cool.
Right. I'm curious, like, and I hope this doesn't make me sound, excuse me, like super dumb. But I'm curious, like, when you say, like, they capitalize on it, you take, like the Colgate commercial that just came out and has, like, rainbow toothpaste, and they're, like, Pride. Like, Colgate, is Colgate doing something to give back, or are they just trying to make some money because it's Pride Month? Is that what you mean by when you say just capitalizing on?
Correct.
They will sell extra toothpaste in the month of June if it is rainbow. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
But then it does bring the good question, what are you doing the rest of the year?
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Wait, there's a rainbow toothpaste?
Their commercial is like a rainbow, but I think it's like on a Hulu or something. It's not like on regular TV, I don't think. I don't watch commercials on regular TV.
I have to go get
it. Does it really come out like a rainbow?
I know. Thank you.
We would all be running out and stacking up with a year's worth of toothpaste.
Marketing geniuses over there at Colgate. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm curious, I kind of look at the nation as like divided, right? So like 50% are like, totally awesome, that's great, go Colgate. And the other people are like, oh God, well, I'm not going to buy Colgate anymore. So when you say like they're capitalizing on it,
right?
Like, do you think that it's worth it for them to sell their rainbow toothpaste for the month of June, even though they're going to lose a bunch of sales for that like 50%? Or do you think
their
sales
go up? Yeah.
So their than 50-50?
Well, yeah, because you're a straight ally, if you've seen that they're supporting this cause and you're walking down the toothpaste aisle, you're more likely to
buy it all.
Colgate that month.
Right.
Especially when you hear about the dum-dum saying, I'm boycotting Colgate. You're like, I'm buying 6 tubes of Colgate, bitch.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to make up for you. Yeah. So
that's kind of where I'm going. So I'm glad to hear that you all agree that it's definitely more than 50%.
Think so.
The nationwide acceptance for the LGBTQ community is like 70%. It's and that's even counting the people who are like, I just don't care either way. But unfortunately, it's the ones who, I mean, I should say the acceptance for as far as like marriage equality goes, there's still some sex, like trans women of color are in more danger than any population of people in the world.
Yeah.
They are absolutely killed at greater rates than even Muslims in this country. Like and they're a super persecuted class of people too. So it's not, unfortunately, the population that don't accept are very vocal, very violent, and very willing to exercise their testosterone levels and act out their hatred in the streets. So,
well, it's like what Chaz said. It's great to see Colgate, you know, come out with Pride toothpaste in June, but are they donating to anti-gay politicians the rest of the year?
Right.
Are they funding, you know, senatorial campaigns of anti-gay politicians the rest of the year? You know, keep your fucking Pride toothpaste. I'd rather have you not support politicians who advocate bigotry.
Boom.
Yeah.
But it's, look at the people even who, I mean, Chick-fil-A, I know.
I love their Pride.
they're not just complicit, they actively work against the gay community, work against it. And I still can't talk some straight people into not going to Chick-fil-A.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even they've said, this is my religious belief and we don't have to do that. Like, that's not it. They funnel a ton of money in. They speak out against the LGBTQ community. They actively work against it. And Dum Dum still want their I've never even been to Chick-fil-A. I'm assuming they sell chicken.
Me neither.
I've been one time. I'll admit it. The chicken was so-so.
I've been once before. I was a little woke about that company. It's just meh.
Yeah, it was meh.
You can get mediocre chicken from a lot of places.
Right.
Exactly. But I'm not going to, that's a battle I'm not going to fight with people. I'll fight with them over voting for fucking anti-gay politicians. But if you want to eat shitty chicken sandwiches somewhere, I'm not going to fight with you over that. Go for it. Go for it. I hope your ass gets 10 times bigger than it is for it, too.
Yeah, it's not the hill you want to die on, but you're kind of like, God damn, dude, like, just don't eat a Chick-fil-A. It's not that hard.
Right. Yeah.
KFC is the way to go, man.
I was just gonna say, I'm not super opposed to KFC. Ugh,
that's still good stuff.
Yeah, like once every couple years.
Every couple years, don't lie.
No, I last time I had KFC was probably like 3 or 4 years ago.
I don't eat fried chicken, but I just want to say Popeye smells really good, and it's Louisiana, so there's that.
And they have nice commercials, too. I love that lady that does the...
suckers for marketing, man.
Sometimes things just smell so good. And the idea of, like, going home and preparing it myself sounds terrible.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't eat a lot of fast food, but there's something in the smell they pump out of those places that, like... I mean, once every 6 months, maybe I'll have fast food. But the smell coming out of even the worst fast food places, I'm like, Burger King smells great right now. Like, no, there's no positive experience.
I feel like there's like a guy reference in here somewhere. If he smells great,
I know.
He
can still, I was like, that's...
it's there. I can't connect it with that.
That sounds like every guy I've ever talked to online. Like, it seems great from far away, and then you get up and you're like,
ugh. Let it go.
Well, you've had
it doesn't look like the way it does on the commercial.
In the Monet's or something like that.
Yeah.
From a distance, it's just a big blur or something like that. Yeah.
Yep.
Are y'all talking about me in front of me?
So before we move on to the worst person on the planet, what do you guys hope to achieve with your writing, besides creative expression and you know, getting your voice out there for other people to hear? What do you hope you achieve?
Okay, so, you know, our novel is fiction, but it is rooted in some truth around some of the experiences of Black, queer people in some of our gayborhoods. And so we really want to just eliminate and shed light on the ways in which people experience our various communities. Even though we may be marginalized or minoritized communities, we can also treat people in ways that make them not feel welcome in, you know, our own, you know, neighborhoods. But then I think another thing that Chaz and I talked a lot about was the importance, especially for these two characters, and in case you forgot, really thinking about the importance of seeking help when needed, whether that's counseling, therapy, help from families, and things like that. Although these two characters have a lot of fun, they also have a lot of struggles. And one of the things we really hope that people will get out of this while enjoying the novel is just thinking about, you know, what are my struggles? What are my problems? Am I seeking help? Am I just sitting home alone and wrestling on my own? That's one thing I want to think that I would like people to get out of it. What about you, Chaz?
That's a great message. Follow that up, Chaz.
Right. I'm like, there you go again. But I think I want people to feel honored and seen. That's it. Like they're able to read it and say, that is me, or I've been there, or I know someone there. Yes, and without giving things away in the book, and know that things can be okay somehow.
Yeah. That was just as good.
Awesome. That was.
I know. You guys are better, a great writing pair.
Yeah.
We try.
We have good chemistry.
It's fun when you do it like that. Gina and I just finished a book, and we're very lucky that we didn't argue over anything. We didn't fight over anything. Like, we just, everything just kind of fell into place. I can't imagine like having to battle over ideas with someone. Mm-hmm. I felt really fortunate when we finished writing. We'll see what happens when we get it back from the editor, but we may fight then. I don't know. It's hard to say.
That's the scariest part of the writing process.
Editing?
Yeah, editing, waiting for the notes, seeing what they think about it. Yeah, that's the scariest part to me.
It's definitely, yeah, it's my least favorite part of the process. When they send it back and there's 1,000 like red marks and you're like, ugh! Yeah, it's my least favorite for sure. Okay, so fucking Mitch McConnell.
Ugh.
I hate this. Ugh. Okay.
Can I just say, like, listening to this podcast, like, getting caught up on everything and having to listen to, like, clips of him talking, every time they cut to another clip of him, like, like, I didn't.
Does he always sound like he has a dick in his mouth? Like, always?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, always.
Yes.
Wait.
Ramp. Daddy 100. Ramp. It's very, like, like, the, yeah. Yeah.
Are you all
the
time? Me?
Miss McConnell, my favorite word is McCall's. McCall's crosses.
So, for those of you that get your news from us, which, like we've told you before, don't do that.
Don't
do that. There's a lot of conversation around Trump, which there should be because he's a despicable human being. But what a lot of people aren't paying attention to, what's going on with all of the flashy, shiny bullshit crimes that he's committing over here, Mitch McConnell is playing the long game on the other side, because unfortunately for the entire country, Mitch McConnell is significantly more intelligent than Donald Trump, which, I mean, that bar is real fucking low, but he's very smart.
Yeah. So, well, and he has the political acumen that Trump does not, which makes him even more powerful and scary. And
The fact that Trump gets his shoes on every day is always surprising to me. And did you see him in those pants? What were those? Like, were those boot cut? Like,
I don't know what was going on. He's wearing a diaper, right? He's wearing a diaper.
Yes? I mean, probably
going to be
an adult diaper.
I am.
Or is his ass just that fat? Maybe his ass really is that fat.
Do you guys watch Parks and Rec?
Yes.
Do you remember when Leslie like tries to write the note to Ben that he has a cute butt, and Jerry gets it and she goes, "Cube, you have a cube butt." That's all I can think of when I see Donald Trump's butt is, "You have a cube butt."
And those photographers that catch him like golfing and playing tennis and stuff. One, I'm sorry, but two, okay, so back to Mitch McConnell.
Yeah.
So what he's been doing is he's been pushing through a number of judiciaries through the system, which are probably going to shape the next two generations at the very least. At this point, Trump has appointed 20% of the circuit judges in 2.5 years in office. He's appointed 134 judges in all. Obama only managed to get 55 in. So to understand kind of the gravity of the situation, that's why I get real frustrated when we have 23 Democratic candidates running for president, when I'm like, get your ass in the Senate where we need you.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't matter if we win the presidency, if we don't take back the Senate, it just doesn't.
Yeah. Right.
And we're going to be right back into a situation where we can't get anything done.
We were talking about that last night during the first part of it. Like, you, more than half of, you know, you don't belong here.
Like I love Pete Buttigieg. I truly love Pete Buttigieg.
I do too.
Go to the Senate. Go to the Senate for the few years and cook your little ass, and then come up and run for president. You're 37, you got some time to kill. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, one, do you think, I mean, you got to give it to him, Mitch McConnell is a brilliant politician. I hate him, but he's a brilliant politician. Mm-hmm. How do we get people to stop paying attention to what's going on with Trump? Because we're not getting, he's not getting impeached. The Republicans run the Senate. It doesn't matter if the House impeaches him. They're not going to impeach him in the Senate. He's staying in office.
And Mike Pence is way worse than him, I think, and way more dangerous. So we don't want him impeached. We just want him to lose.
Well, yeah, because he has mouth diarrhea. Everything just falls out of his mouth. Like, Mike Pence is smarter than that. Anyway, how do we get people to pay attention to what's going on in the Senate and what Mitch McConnell is doing is my first question. And then also, how do you think this has gone unnoticed for so long? Because McConnell didn't even, he got away with not appointing a Supreme Court Justice Obama's last four
years. I was
going to
say, he pulled that whole little thing with Merrick Garland, and that was some shady business. And I think it's just, it's not sexy. It's not sensational.
What about Mitch McConnell is sex? Oh,
but listen, you know what?
The stories aren't. That's what I'm saying. The stuff with Trump is like, it's flashy and it's, oh my God, I can't believe he did that. And he said this and it's outlandish and it's whatever. And it's all the kind of salacious stuff that people like, but it doesn't just elicit the same reaction, even though what he's doing is a million times worse.
Yeah.
And you know what? The average person, they know the Supreme Court, they know the president and vice president, and they know Congress. But if you ask them to delve any deeper into, okay, what are the two parts of Congress? What are the two houses of Congress? At that point, they start tuning out because they don't remember that deeply. Okay, Mitch McConnell is the majority leader of the Senate. Do you have any idea what that means? That fucker has way more power than any one individual in government should have. But if you ask the average person, they don't know what the fuck a Senate majority leader does.
Right. Well, the average person thinks a mayor runs a city. A mayor doesn't run a city. A city manager runs a city.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. That that's a perfect analogy.
Exactly. I was going to say that's the thing I think with this country. We do a great job actually at keeping folks ignorant to how systems work.
Yes.
In public and in private education. And so like Fred and I both, we are in higher education, and we get people who come to the university not understanding government.
Yes.
And so I think what Trump era has really highlighted for me, who is a young professional in higher education, is that our top scholars still need like massive and grave understanding of our systems. And so like for this next academic year, I'm focusing on like elementary teaching of our systems of government.
Are you going to play the Bill cartoon in the way where the little Bill dances up the steps to the Capitol?
I was just saying,
I'm just a Bill.
Well, I was
a Bill.
I'm just a bill that. Up on
I
Capitol
can't
Hill.
How a bill becomes a law and how can
Schoolhouse Rock, work. Man, you learn a lot of, you can learn everything you need to know about government from Schoolhouse Rock.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And so I think to build upon what Chaz just said, I think in addition to learning about systems, I think that people need to think about getting involved or understanding the local level as well.
Yes.
Who are on their school boards, who are on the city council, who are the people who are the neighborhood council people and things like that, because those are the people kind of like these circuit court judges who make the decisions that affect our day-to-day lives. And even though the Supreme Court does make big decisions that affect everyone, they're pretty conservative in terms of the kind of cases and the amount of cases they take.
Right.
But it's these judges that McConnell and Trump are pushing through on the local and district level that will really shape our lives in ways that we don't even think about. And so, yeah, I agree with this conversation that we need to educate people about the systems, that people need to understand that everything that Trump does is a distraction to keep us kind of tweeting writing about you know, whatever the tweet of the day is from 45. But while we're upset about that, we're not thinking about all these judges who are making decisions about policing and jails and about, you know, school funding and things like that. And so, you know, I think it takes both understanding and being impressed with what's happening nationally, but also thinking about what's happening right next door and what's happening across town in the city council meeting and everything.
Well, I think too, I was just going to say, I think the more you understand exactly how everything works, you understand how important your role in all of it is.
Correct.
I think so many people don't participate in it because they don't understand how important it is. They think their votes don't count. And a lot of that has to do with just ignorance to the system in general. Mm-hmm. They don't understand. Most people don't forget. And it drives me nuts that elected officials work for the electorate. Mm-hmm. They work for you. They're not meant to represent all of their own interests. They're meant to represent the people that elected them. And so, you know, they work for you.
Thanks.
Yes.
They also work for the people who fund their campaigns too.
Mm-hmm.
That's who they care about.
That's who they care about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. Everyone.
And what's scary about these judges is that people don't realize a lot of these judges, especially, you know, like they're going to be around forever. They're not coming up for re-election.
No, appointments. Yeah.
It's a lifetime appointment, and the ones that they are at these appellate levels and local levels are like in their 30s and 40s, so they will be around for decades making decisions about our lives. I don't know about. And these cases may or may not even get to the Supreme Court, because like I said before, Supreme Court is pretty selective and choosy and conservative with what they will listen to and hear. Or they'll just push it back to the local level, and then we have to deal with the ramifications.
And that's part of the problem with these super, super conservative Supreme Court justices, is the fact that they're so behind where society is. And that's, I think, that something that's a constant struggle with having these lifetime appointments, is that then you have people in there making decisions who are from a generation that's so far removed from what the issues are currently, that that it's much harder to sway them. And so when you get these conservative judges in there, it puts them back even further. So we might be in 2019, but they're stuck in 1970 with the way, and they're not willing to change their, 1870.
Yeah.
They're not willing to change their views on anything. Like, all of our laws, everything about what we do is it's a breathing document. It's meant to change and evolve, and there wouldn't be a ratification process if it wasn't meant for that. And so I think it's just hard to get these people to change with the times. And so what Mitch McConnell's doing is he's purposely choosing these people that are not.
Well, let's talk about what he's
progress.
Let's talk about what he's actually done, so people understand. He has, there used to be a 30-hour rule, a 30-hour debate rule, where the Congress had to debate judicial appointments for at least 30 hours. Mm-hmm. He went nuclear on it and now has reduced it to 2 hours. He's also made it so you only needed 50 votes to pass any judge when it used to be 60. Now, the Democrats did do this first with judge appointments, but it's because the Republicans refused to put anyone in that Obama had elected because they're a bunch of assholes. Right. So now you're looking at a situation where it doesn't matter even if every single Democrat voted against them, they're going in. So he's basically built an assembly line to create the kind of judiciary. And for people who don't understand, the judiciary is a co-equal branch of government. It has just as much power. Look at how many of Trump's positions have been blocked by the judiciary in the last 2.5 years. It's the judiciary has been the only, because Congress doesn't do their fucking job. The judiciary has been the only thing that stands between Trump and probably nuclear war in a lot of instances.
Mayhem.
Mayhem. Exactly.
And Mitch McConnell has said out loud, this will be the greatest impact he will have on history, is this transition of judicial appointments, which we can get into that later. I don't think anyone should have a lifetime appointment to anything.
I agree.
I think they should have a max of 20 years, Supreme Court, federal judges, 20 years, you're done.
Yeah, like, that's it. And one generation.
He's also removed the American Bar Association used to have to give a rating on judges to say whether or not they qualify to be judges. He's gotten rid of that. So you're
like the American Bar.
Yeah, the people who say, yeah, you can be a lawyer. He's like, we don't need them. It doesn't matter. So he's appointing federal judges who have never even tried a case in court because they align with his political system. So if you can see, like, you have finally this sweeping movement of prison reform coming along, that we're locking up too many people. We're locking up too many people of color, and we're keeping them in there too long. We finally are getting people to listen to that instance, and that is the case. And, you know, we're privatizing prisons, and it disproportionately affects certain populations of people. But now you're putting in all of these judges who are going to say, I don't care, throw them in jail for 30 years over pot. Like, it's like Brock Turner in California gets 6 months for rape, but you can spend 30 years in jail for a pound of weed. Like, that is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, he's a rich white kid. That's why.
You're kidding.
I wanted to say, that's how audacious patriarchy is.
He's a really good swimmer, though.
He's a white swimmer.
Absolutely.
He made some bad decisions.
He just fell on that girl, and, you know, it was an accident.
Yeah.
He wanted it.
Oh.
Yeah, and his erection accidentally fell in.
She wasn't even his type.
Oh.
I knew I'd get that reaction. So real quick.
First of all, whose type is Donald Trump?
First of all, rapists don't have types. That's not a thing.
Right.
Yeah. Secondly, the first sentence out of his mouth should have been, I would never rape someone. Not, she's not my type.
Not
that's disgusting.
Can we start there?
Yeah.
Yes. There you go.
So final thoughts on Mitch McConnell. We'll go around in a circle. Stacey? Stace? Is your mic on?
Yeah, no, I was just, I figured Stacey would have a lot more to say. I hate to reiterate, because I've been sitting back listening to everybody's stuff. A lot of what Stacey said about, excuse me, well, a lot of what Chaz said about, it needs to start at a lower level of, why are we not teaching government in high schools? I mean, I know it's there, but it's not prerequisite to anything. I think it's like an AP class. Like, I didn't have to take government. So I think that's where we need to start.
Everybody does, but they don't teach. Everybody has to take it to graduate, but you're not learning. It's all hypothetical, out of context type stuff that you can't relate to.
I don't think I took it.
And it's nothing.
Mom,
current.
Did I take it? I know you're listening.
You took government.
Yeah, but it was government in 1776.
Yes, American government. Yeah.
Right. It's not the current shit that's happening right now.
It's the founding of
the fact that I don't even remember taking it is a sign right there that it needs to be like a juniors and seniors both need to take it. It needs to be a bigger deal. Mm-hmm. And then what Stacey said about the glamorization of what Trump is doing and saying, I think overtakes anything anybody has stepped down from him is doing. It's all, what's he saying on Twitter right now? That's what we're going to talk about. And that's what the fake news is going to run with, you know, like whatever they take from their headlines and post on social media. And that's what's going to take off and have everybody talking when that's not what we should be talking about. So I feel like it's all just covered up with headlines, you know? So I hate reiterating what we already say, but yeah, both you guys, good job. That's what I think. That's what I think.
I guess I would say, without rehashing anything, is as we head into the next election cycle, do your research on the people that you're voting for your Senate and Congress, like everybody in Congress, like your everybody, just do your research. Like, Mitch McConnell is there because people elected him. And
six
most
times.
People, when they're
six times.
And
yeah,
I think
and they have
people,
no idea why they voted
right,
for
that's what I was just going to say. I don't know how many people do their homework and actually look at candidates when it comes to positions like that. But do your research. Everybody's going to be really, you know, they do their research and stuff on presidents. But it seems like anything under that, we just don't care. They pick a name that sounds familiar. They pick an incumbent. Incumbents aren't always the best choice. And so I guess my sort of thing is just do your research, look at who's running. You'll have your ballot. There's tons of websites you can go to where you can look at that are pretty non-biased that show who supports these candidates, what they stand for. Some of that stuff can be hard to read, but it's important. It's important to make sure that our senators and our Congress members are people that we want making those decisions, that we feel comfortable and are confident in their ability to make decisions that represent what we want. And so do your research and vote.
Jean?
I absolutely agree with Stacey. It has never been easier to have access to information about candidates' voting records.
Yeah.
Candidates' positions on things. What's important to you? What are your core values? Does that guy that's been in office for 30 years, does he truly represent what it is you believe in? And to the people of Kentucky, oh my fucking God.
We have listeners in Kentucky, so be nice.
Yeah, absolutely. People in Kentucky, I'm especially calling on you guys to do your research, because this guy is fucking everything up. The fact that he's been destroying our court system on the district level, that is important shit, man. And we're going to be suffering the repercussions of this long after fucking Donald Trump is locked up in a prison or a lunatic asylum or wherever the fuck he's going to end up after he loses. You don't understand how bad Mitch McConnell is fucking.
Or he's
going to
be in a hotel
over.
Room in Russia with hookers pissing on his face. It doesn't matter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Whatever. You know, as long as he's not in the fucking White House having people piss on him there.
Oh. I love it.
Chaz, what do you think?
Oh my gosh, there's so many thoughts.
I'm gonna let you go before Frederick this time.
Okay. I'm want to talk to the people who are conscious about voting for this kind of regression.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are very intelligent, who are conscious about voting and placing people in these positions so that we can continue to keep the country predominantly run and controlled by middle class and rich white men. There are people who are invested in that kind of system. So I'm thinking about them. And I want to say that I want you all to remember humanity. And so when you think about humanity, we know that when we harm someone else, we ultimately harm ourselves because we are genuinely connected in this system. In that, and so if you were to think about how this affects someone else, maybe you will grow more into your own humanity. But if we're not talking about humanity, then we really aren't talking about improving each other or our systems at all. So that's that.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Chaz, and with what everyone else has said. And also what I would say is I was done with Mitch McConnell like 12 years ago when Obama was first elected president, and he said, I'm not working with Obama. We're going to make Obama a first-term president. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, when people show you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
And my Maya Angelou used to say that all the time. But what I'm thinking is, one, Mitch McConnell has mastered the art of thinking the long game. Mm-hmm. And so if anyone who's listening can start thinking about how do I develop those skills to be strategic about long-term planning and kind of that behind-the-scenes stuff that doesn't get headlines, I think that would be a great skill for many of us to start thinking about developing, including myself. And then I would also invite people to really think about locally how to get involved, how to serve, how to vote locally, how to really research the people who are running for office or who are already in office, and not being afraid to ask questions, maybe going to some of those boring meetings, and learning about what's happening, and just really connecting on a local level, because those are the areas that really affect our lives, much like these judges that Mitch McConnell and Trump appoint at the local and appellate level and everything. So those are some of my thoughts.
My final thoughts are Mitch McConnell, of his six races, has only won each of them by about 3%. 3%.
I was going to say it's not much, right? Yeah.
He's not, even as red as Kentucky is, they're not necessarily thrilled with him. So if you are a voter in Kentucky or you have a senator like Mitch McConnell, and well, if you're listening to us, you already agree with us because no Republicans are listening.
You probably didn't vote.
But we have to stop saying it's rude to talk about politics because politics affects every single aspect of our lives. And talking about politics to people that you don't agree with doesn't necessarily mean a fight. Challenge their thought process, challenge where they get their information, challenge what they're thinking. And when you challenge them and ask them poignant questions instead of just trying to prove them wrong, you may make them rethink their stances. Because as much as we feel like the country's completely divided, if we got away from our keyboards and actually talk to people, we actually have a lot more in common than we think we do. Stop thinking the founders were infallible.
They knew they weren't.
The Constitution is fallible. It was intended to be rewritten because they understood that 200 300 500 years later, the same things that were in practice at that time, that was born out of oppression from a king, and it needs to transform as more and more of the country breaks out of oppression. And until we start ratifying documents to reflect the breakaway from that oppression, we're never going to really make any changes. And when you are voting, who's even more important is your district attorney. The district attorney deems all of the cases that are going to be seen before these asshole judges that McConnell is working so hard to put away. So if you have a district attorney that is saying, I don't care about pot cases, like these are my priorities, murder, rape. You know, here's my list of things that I'm going to prosecute, and the rest, I'm not going to seek maximum sentence of 25 years in jail for, you know, drug possession. Like, you need to look at your district attorney, and it all goes back to voting locally. So that's my spiel on that.
Yeah, good.
What's everyone obsessed with this week?
I will start. There is this new show on OWN called Ambitions that has been my go-to television for 2 weeks in a row. It's a new nighttime soap opera that's created by this man out of Atlanta named Jamie Giddens. And it's about these two political families that are warring against each other over control of Atlanta, but it's also a lot of sex and sin and drugs and rock and roll. And I love Ambitious because I grew up watching soap operas with aunts and uncles and grandmas and things like that. And this
which
is
Jamie.
Oh, I was a Young and a Restless, okay. One Life to Live, and General yes. Hospital person.
Oh, I loved Skye. Skye was my favorite. Remember Skye Quartermain?
Skye having starred on All My Children. That's what Chaz used to watch.
She did. Oh,
Skye. Yeah, so anyway, Ambitions on OWN is my latest obsession. It's only been 2 episodes out, but I've watched both of them at least 3 times because it's so good.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Chaz, what about you?
I just started this show called Euphoria, which is on HBO, and it is amazing. It follows high school students. Zendaya is the lead character, and she's an addict, and my mother was an addict, so I'm a child of an addict, and so this show brings up a lot for me, but it talks about drugs, I think, in a realistic and healthy way, healthy as in, like, honest, in an honest way, how, like, drugs actually make people feel good. But drugs are also very bad. And I think people who talk about drugs, they try to shame people not to do them, but not talk about, like, but no, drugs make you feel fucking great. But drugs are also fucking horrible. So I love this show.
That's a conundrum.
Yeah. Euphoria.
Stace?
So I have so many things that I'm obsessed with. I'm going to list them as fast as I can. Number one, movie to watch, don't watch it, was Murder Mystery on Netflix. It was fucking terrible. Okay. Hated it. Didn't get it. A book
wait,
that
wait,
I
what was that?
It's one with like Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler. And
it was so bad. I was like, why is everybody raving about this? It was
because
terrible.
It's Jennifer Aniston. Everyone loves Jennifer Aniston.
And Adam Sandler. Like, I don't know. It was real bad. Second was, I'm trying to, my kids are gone for a week and a half, so I'm trying to read all the books I have stacked up. Like, to try to pass the time.
Yes, in case you 100%
ordering. In case you forgot, but I just reread The Other Westmore, which is my top 3 favorite books, and I recommend it to every single person on the planet. It's so fucking good. And the last thing was, I don't know if it's national news or if it's just California, but Officer O'Sullivan's thing was today. She was shot in line of duty. She was 26 years old. She was only on the job for like 7 months, I think. She responded to a domestic dispute.
Sacramento.
Her story is so sad. And so, and I just love that everybody came together today in Sacramento. It was really emotional. It was really cool to see all the people come together. But damn it, why did it have to happen? All those things. So those are my obsessions.
Stacey, you have 1 minute.
Oh, whoa. Okay.
Sorry. No, then, I mean, okay. She always goes for 7, so.
I know, I do. Okay, well, I have 2 real quick. Number one is Toy Story 4. So good, you guys. I was worried about it. I heard some weird stuff. I think it's just because it's not as heavy as Toy Story 3. Like, legitimately, in Toy Story 3, I was like, are they going to kill all these toys in an incinerator?
It's too much. It was too much.
I thought that, like, they couldn't possibly. I literally was like, they're going to Game of Thrones this, and all the Woody's going to die, and it's the whole thing. And so, and so it was great. Rashida Jones was one of the writers.
Oh, love her.
It is all over it. It is so funny. Kean Peele are in the cast. Tony Hale from Veep is in the cast. Like, it is, I laughed so hard during, like, way more during Toy Story 4 than I laughed during all of Murder Mystery.
But it was also deep and dark as well. Just deep. As deep as number 3.
It was dark. It was dark, but not as heavy.
Good.
But it was
so good.
So good. I highly recommend it. The other thing is, Piper had to have 2 teeth pulled today, which there were puppy teeth that never fell out. She just turned
Piper's
1.
Piper's her grandma. It's fine.
No. And she is so high.
Oh, Piper.
She doesn't know what's happening. She went, like, she normally runs over to, like, the back door to go to the bathroom, and she ran to the kitchen island instead, and then just stood at it like it was a door, waited for me to open it.
Yeah.
Euphoria and people really enjoying drugs. That is Piper right now. Piper enjoys all the drugs.
Oh, you'll get her.
Jane, what are you obsessed with?
So high.
right, I'm gonna go through this really quickly. First of all, I'm obsessed with the fact that fucking women pay more for t-shirts than men.
Yeah.
Fucking the same exact t-shirt, but because it's a woman's, it's $2 more.
And it's less material.
Less material. What do women have to pay for tampons and maxi pads for 40 fucking years? What do men have to pay for other than that fucking powder they put on their balls? What do men have to pay
Wait,
for?
Wait, we pay for powder in our balls?
You put that powder in your balls? Powder on your balls in the hot weather to keep.
Oh. Warm.
I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Every move you make, a woman has to pay more for shit than men. And yeah. I'm sick of it.
Yes.
Pay more and for and get paid less.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Thank you, Frederick.
I think
Thank
the
you.
Difference is that men won't. And we'll pay it. I'm like, okay, well, just shut up and take my money. I'm
well, you know what? I need tampons. It's
I know.
It's a matter of a luxury item.
Those should be free.
Yes.
Thank you, Chaz. Of course they should. Yes. And then the second thing I am obsessed with, and if you notice me, I keep turning around, Kamala Harris.
Yes.
Oh my God.
If I think I'm team Kamala 2020.
If I'm going to vote for anybody based on looks ever in my life, it's going to be Kamala 2020. Woo!
Same. Woo! I want to see a Warren Harris ticket so bad.
Oh,
so bad.
Yes.
So bad.
I want to see Warren Harris. I'm so tired of these old white men. I'm so sick of them.
Oh my God. I just got a tingle somewhere, Jackie, when you said that.
We don't need to hear about it. We don't need to hear about it.
Well, it was funny because Emily, my roommate's downstairs watching the debate, and I said, okay, how's the debate going? And she said, I'm behind. There are some dum-dums. But Mayor Pete, Kamala, and Biden are doing well. Sanders is just yelling a lot.
Bernie needs to be done, too.
He's being who he's been.
He's being Bernie.
My obsession this week is the book I already told you guys about that I read, which is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. You guys, life-changing. Like, Evelyn is the total anti-hero that you didn't, heroine that you didn't know you needed in your life. It's so good. She's this bisexual woman who comes of age in, like, 1950s Hollywood. It's so good. I can't even, she has zero apology, zero regrets for the people she slept with to get where she was, to get ahead, to kind of push her weight around because it wasn't going to be given to her as a woman in the 1950s. She was unashamed to say that she enjoyed sex and used it to get what she wanted. It was so good and so poignant in so many different parts. And there was so many like little life lessons in it about just, this is your only life. You need to take it for everything it has because no one's going to give you another chance. It was just phenomenal. It was phenomenal. So, what kind of, how's everyone's alcohol? Yay? Nay?
Okay.
Done.
Empty. Gone. Done.
Gone also. So good. Wine in a can, guys.
Chaz, was it the vodka or the Pedialyte that got you?
It was. The vodka got me. The Pedialyte saved me.
Yeah.
Oh, the problem and the solution.
There it is.
Before we go, Frederick, Chaz, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you, your Twitter handles, Facebook, and where they can purchase your book?
All right. So in terms of purchasing, in case you forgot, you can definitely find
That's
it on
the book
Bold
name.
Stroke. In case you forgot, by Chaz Lamar and Frederick Smith on Bold Strokes Books or any online area, any online retailer. Frederick Smith, I'm F Smith 827 on all social media platforms.
Mm-hmm. And you can locate me with my name Chaz Cruz without the A. So my writer's name is Chaz Lamar, but my whole name is Chaz Lamar Cruz. So you can locate me, Chaz without the A, Cruz, C-R-U-Z.
I just want to thank you guys for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure to have you. You're both hilarious and brilliant, and we just had a great time. So
thank you guys.
And I think our listeners will be excited because they're like 96% women, and I think they'll I think they'll enjoy this episode anyway.
I wish they could see them because they're both so adorable.
So we will put links to their books and their profiles on our social media. And until next week, thank you for joining us. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacey, the political princess.
I'm Jean, drooling over Kamala Harris.
I'm Chaz, the turned up, responsible king.
Oh. Yeah.
And I'm Fred, the scholar Baywatch.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.
Bye.